Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Kate Loving and the Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Schenck of katelovingschenck.com, prayerprescriptions.com, and the author of the upcoming book, Prayer Prescriptions, Spiritual Remedies for Long-Lasting Health. My guest this evening is Marguerite Wilson, an artist who lives in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Marguerite makes mandala quilts, or art quilts as she calls them. She also creates an art based on an ancient East Indian spiritual philosophy. The call-in number is 347-205-9200. Joining me now is Marguerite Wilson. Hello, Marguerite.
Hello, Kate. How are you?
I am wonderful. Thank you. Your art is so beautiful. Tell us your website so we can start out with that, and we'll mention it a few times as the hour goes on.
Okay, so my website is www.marguerite.wilson.com, and Marguerite is MargueriteWilson.com.
And it's like striking. The first picture you see is this beautiful picture of you, Marguerite, with this beautiful mandala. Quilt or a mandala behind you, which you have created. How did you start doing this? This is so fascinating.
Well, I started quilting when my mother suggested that we try to make quilts, and this was after I graduated from college with a degree in philosophy, and she was an economics professor, so this was really jumping into something neither of us knew much about, and her inspiration for doing it was that I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska, and there is a ball that is held every year. And so when you live there, you have to buy a new ball gown every year. And so she had sort of a closet full of these things and thought, I need to make them into something else. So that was her inspiration. And I said, well, before I cut up my beautiful dresses, I would do a practice quilt first. And I saw a brown and red log cabin quilt, and I started collecting brown and red fabrics for a whole year and then started putting them together. And it was so exciting to spend a whole day figuring out, you know, which red went next to which other red. And it's almost like when you start doing things like this, you know, everything is telling you a story. You're making it up as you go along.
Right.
And it was such a joy that I just loved doing it. Now, I never cut up any of my dresses, and my mother didn't either, but that was what started me out.
Well, isn't that quite economical of your mother, is being an economist, to do something that really took off for you and for her? And that she was instrumental in getting you started in that. That's so cool.
Well, she never actually made a quilt. She had gotten my brother's flannel shirts and had them all laid out. And so when she saw my quilt, she decided not to put hers together, which was really too bad. I mean, she should have. But she was a great knitter. So anyway.
Yeah, right.
But,
that is very cool. And is mostly your art? Well, it sounds like you do other things besides quilts, but that's how it all started, and that is a lot of what you do now as well.
Yes, and basically I really collect fabric. If you look at the mandalas, the quilts that I've made, you know, it would be hard to go out and find that many fabrics with fruit or with clowns or any of the themes. I sort of collect them for a long time, and then when I find something that is so inspiring, then I say, okay, now I'm going to make this particular quilt or that one. Mm-hmm. And the way I do it, I'm jumping in here, is that
I design
my quilts on a felt wall. So what you do is you start and you stick the fabrics up there, and then you can move them around. You don't have to pin or anything like that, but all the fabrics get additioned to be in the quilt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so they have to have some sort of something that sparks the quilt, makes it interesting, or, you know, sometimes I'm going crazy because I need one sort of cherry fabric or something like that, and, you know, I have to keep searching to find the right thing to pull it all together.
So where do you get your fabric? Where do you get it?
Well, fortunately, Santa Fe is a fabulous quilting store. Albuquerque has several great, great quilting stores. And then there's one quilting store online called eQuilter. And
mm-hmm.
they have a huge array of fabrics. So those are the places. And then when I used to travel to different cities, of course, I'd have to go to the fabric stores up there. And
mm-hmm.
there's a great
mm-hmm.
one in Seattle that I love. So,
well, you could probably get the fabric in Seattle online as well, I would think.
Maybe so. There are a couple other online fabric places that are great. Well, there's one that has a catalog called Hancock's of Paducah. That's a good source as well. And then
mm-hmm.
I actually
mm-hmm.
buy from the fabric companies, from Alexander Henry and Hoffman. Alexander Henry, when they stopped having a person to represent them, they used to send you a suitcase full of all their fabrics, all their latest ones.
Oh, my
ones.
Gosh. Uh-huh.
And you got to go through and just look at which ones you wanted. It was great. That's a lot more fun than looking online.
Well, also, have you ever gone into, like, Goodwill might have some interesting fabric tucked away here and there. You just, I bet you're always on the lookout for things. It's just, you just can't help yourself, I would think.
Well, you know, only once have I ever used a fabric from a piece of clothing, and I was doing a bird quilt, and I had gotten my son in Hawaii a beautiful shirt with parrots on it, but it was actually made by Hoffman. And so
mm-hmm.
the reason it's hard to just pick clothing or something like that, which is certainly the way people used to make quilts, is that I like images that are very crisp and
yeah.
well-defined, and usually it helps if they have gold in them.
Mm-hmm.
So find that the old fabrics just look sort of old. So.
Yeah, that's true, too. Yeah, they've lost their luster, as it were. and so tell us about the East Indian, and what is that? How do you pronounce that?
Vastu, except I may not be pronouncing it quite. When I've been around some of the Indian friends of mine, they pronounce it differently than I do. It's sort
mm-hmm.
of Vastu architecture.
And that's not quilting then. So it's an architecture kind of. You even have built a house.
Right.
That.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that that it's something I never imagined that I'd ever be interested in. Except, I'll tell you what the preview I had of this. I was seeing a person in Santa Fe who was a Brazilian healer,
mm-hmm.
and he told me. Said, I'm finding something very interesting about your quilts. I really think they have to do with healing.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that's interesting. I've never quite thought of it like that. He said, you know, it's like when you walk into a building and you're different afterwards.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So I had never really thought about walking into a building and how that can change you. And so that was quite a few years before I ever discovered Vastu. But I actually, he had me get this book called The Serpent in the Sky, and I never opened it, but I have read it very carefully since then, which is really about all the architecture in Egypt. And it's the story of somebody that went down there to the Temple of Luxor and spent 15 years measuring everything. And this was fascinating because he really is talking a lot about just pure number and sacred geometry. And after studying Vastu for a couple of years and building my house and then finding going into my own library and finding this book and realizing how important it was to me to sort of get another impression of what I had been working with. So in the meantime, in 2005, there was a person, a friend from Colorado, who came down and gave the first lecture on Vastu architecture. And I was absolutely hooked after just hearing him speak about how Vastu actually comes from the root Vas, which means all there is. And so in a way, it's this ancient study from the Shastras that is about 10,000 to 13,000 years old, explaining how the universe works. And I was pretty sure that there was logic behind it, but I didn't know what it was at that time. So I loved studying it. And almost immediately, I decided that I would love to build a house like using all the principles to see what it actually felt like. And, you know, this is so foreign to the way, you know, we live. We put a house anywhere just because of the view or, you know, it's pretty random. And going back to some of these old principles was very interesting.
How long did it take you to build your house?
Well, when I first started studying Vastu, I studied it for about 6 months. And then wound up going to India. I decided if I was going to do it, I had to study with Dr. Ganapati Sabati, who was the premier expert in the field. And so I was there for about 5 weeks. And really understood, because there's so many rules, but some things are very important. And I sort of felt like all the people that I was with really got the transmission on what Vastu really is about. And in India, people, most people do build, I mean, they know about Vastu. It sort of was, When the British came in and colonized India, anything Indian was, you know, wasn't valued the way it should have been. And so for a couple of hundred years, that was what happened. And so Dr. Stoppity is somebody who was tirelessly trying to bring this back and saying this is such an amazing science. And through his efforts, I mean, he really awakened people's interest again. And he died last year, but so that my first after studying for 6 months and then going to India and then coming back, one of the women there was given the directive to start a university that had to do with Mayanic science. And there is a link to this website on my, to her website on my website. So in the meantime, I was began looking for land in Santa Fe, and a whole group of people, Dr. Stoppity and a few of his architects, came from India to Santa Fe and gave a class that was attended by people from Iceland, Denmark, Germany, just because this kind of knowledge hadn't really been put out anywhere before. So the whole time I had been studying it, I had also been trying to learn more about it. Because it's a real spiritual science, it's not easy to understand, but you dive into the knowledge, and it's quite profound. So it wasn't
very,
until
more mystical than anything, like very mystical.
Well, it is very mystical, and
mm-hmm.
Basically you are building a house that has a cosmic iodic number that resonates with your own birth chart, your like who you are as an individual and different family members.
Mm-hmm.
And when you build like this, you're basically building a structure that is a universe. Because there are
mm-hmm.
four kinds of space. There's inner space, outer space, terrestrial space, and built space.
Mm-hmm.
So every time
mm-hmm.
you put up four walls, you create a universe. You enclose space. And
yeah.
if you know how to maximize the good effects of space through building, you can create a very vibrant building that helps, you know, boost the individual or anyone, I think, that comes in to it. And in all things Indian, there's not one size fits all.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of the interesting part about Indian philosophy. It's always got to be tailored to the person, and the it's not that everything works for everyone. They're not rules like that.
Well, it sounds like your house is a place of healing.
Yeah, I think it is.
How big is it?
Well, yeah. It's a house, a studio, and a garage. And the
mm-hmm.
house is about 2,100 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
The studio is about 700 square feet. And I think the garage is about 600 square feet.
Right.
And there, it's laid out on a grid on the land. So the house is placed in a very precise way that has to do with the absolute true north, south, east, west energies of the earth,
mm-hmm.
and then deflected one degree. And then the studio is taking the same grid from the house and extending it, so there's
mm-hmm.
a very precise place where it is, and the garage as well. So I think when you drive up to it, it feels like it's been there forever.
Right.
And if you look at some of the old cities, I mean, they were all laid out precisely on the Earth's grid, and they're
mm-hmm.
all very regular. You know, they're not, they're right on the grid, which is supposed to make everything more peaceful and calm. But it's actually
it's
more like high energy.
Yeah, now grid, can you elaborate on that word a second? The grid of the earth, I would think that also it would align with the, say, the heavenly grid also.
Yeah.
I mean, have you ever heard of the crystalline grid? Crystalline grid. It's a grid that goes around the earth, and it's a vibration of pure love, and it has recently become active, whereas it had been inactive before. So, I mean, I was curious by the use of the word grid that you just used in relationship to the fact that the house is on a grid that probably is aligned with a grid that is hard to put your finger on.
I think it's true. I have heard of the crystalline grid, and I'm not sure exactly how it relates, but I have a feeling it relates probably very, very exactly.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I don't know. That just came to me. I was just thinking about it today, as a matter of fact, because I'm doing a virtual book tour for my book on a woman's blog tomorrow who has done extensive. She is a channeler, and she has been. Well, she did a until a seminar one time on the crystalline grid as it related to the end of the Mayan calendar. And it seems like there's a relationship there between the end of one and the one, and then the crystalline grid becoming active as somehow that's all related. And she did this teleseminar, and I was listening to it with my dog at the time, who absolutely just became enthralled by this thing. And he was so adorable. Like, for days, he was in ecstasy. So,
that's interesting because, when I was first about to build the house, I was told, and I'm not sure if this is true or not, but if there were 100 Vastu houses that were built very precisely, that would completely change the energy of, you know, that would bring a lot more harmony to the world.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
Now, the address where my house is Fido Lane.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So one of the terrible things that happened when I was building the house was that my dog died right before I moved in.
Uh-huh.
So I was in a very heart space when I actually moved in here. But all the dogs that have ever visited just love it here.
Oh.
And so I don't know why this little street, Fido Lane, only has like 3 addresses on it that are Fido Lane. But it's definitely a great favorite of the dogs, and they are very well behaved in here.
Well, they must really feel the vibrations, you know. They're so into harmony. That is what I believe a dog's highest calling is to bring harmony to those around them and to... And so they would seek out harmony, and I would think that your house has this very high vibration of harmony is what I'm thinking. Do you have a picture of it somewhere?
Well, I do. It's on the website.
Okay. I need to look at that.
There was an article in the Santa Fean, which is a magazine that comes out every 2 months in Santa Fe.
Yeah.
So in the February-March issue, there's some pictures of the interior of the house, as well as one sort of view from the east. It has amazing views on every side. So, but in the on my website, if you look at the house, you can see the finished house and house studio and garage and what they all look like.
Uh-huh.
And it's they're on this very flat plane. So, but there's a picture there.
And you've been living there for how long?
Almost 3 years.
Mm-hmm. And do you live there by yourself?
I do.
And you call yourself a fiber artist. Isn't that interesting?
Well, I think it's because I started out as a weaver.
Yeah.
And then I fell in love with beads. And, of course, when you're a fiber artist, you sort of try everything. I wasn't very good at making baskets, but I do love mm-hmm. what they look like. And then I started doing quilts. And so that's generally what somebody that is in doing the kinds of things that I do does. I mean,
yeah.
They call themselves a fiber artist because usually you do a lot of different things. I learned how to spin.
Yes.
So
all
things
like
fiber.
I love that. Very meditative to the spinning.
Yes.
I have a beautiful picture up of your house. Oh, my gosh. And not only that, but you're right. I see mountains in the background. That is amazing.
Well, it's one thing I love about it, too, is that I have great views of the sunset because the dining room
mm-hmm.
is facing west. That's a good place for a dining room. You asked me how long it took me to build it, and I would say it took about 10 and a half months
mm-hmm.
from the time we first started it till the day I moved in. And I wasn't necessarily planning on building a greenhouse, I, because my architect was so interested in green building, she's very allergic to a lot of different things. So I have one of the greenest houses you can imagine. It's a timber frame with straw and clay walls. So it's not straw bale and it's not adobe, but it's this mixture of the straw and clay. And so what Paula calls it, her house is Echo Nest.
Because they have very well insulated.
Yeah, it's 14-inch walls. And the way you tell that when the straw and clay is mixed up enough and dried out enough to plaster is that the straw actually sent out green shoots. And so it's really living house. And there was a deluge right before they'd gotten the roof on the very front of the house. So those walls took a little bit longer to actually dry out. I think there was about 3 weeks where not a lot was happening, but 10 and a half months to do the whole thing, and it was pretty amazing.
Well, you're talking about measuring everything to 1/32 1/32nd of an inch, and everything is measured that way. Explain how that works. Well, no wonder it seems to me it would have taken a million years to make a house. So it's a miracle that it was created in 10 months.
Well, when I told people that was the exactitude that was needed to build the house that has this particular resonance.
Yeah.
In it so that it can carry this vibration. It's that extreme attention to detail that was needed. But the people that were working on it were figuring out ways to make everything work right. And mm-hmm. so there was a, and it just has to be on the floor level of everything. You don't have to have all the walls and the roof.
I see. Mm-hmm.
I mean, they are straight, and they probably are about the same, but they drew the grid of the house on the concrete mm-hmm. with the chalk lines and hairspray, and you can measure those so that they're absolutely right, and then when the plaster, everything comes, it can come right to the point where it joins together. But it did make the end part of building the house much easier. I mean, once all that attention to detail had happened, in the end, it was, it was sort of easy. Besides that, all the numbers in the house relate to the square that I was using. So it's a 9x9 grid, but it's not entirely square, because there are places where it bumps out and bumps in, because that's okay. It, the house should be beautiful. That's part of Vastu. So
Well, I was interested also that your house is built using the same principles as the temples in India were built.
So
you're talking about, you know, a very, oh my gosh, how can I explain this? It just seems like there's that your house is aligning vibrationally with a very high energy. That's the only way I can say it at this moment. I can't. What comes to mind are the pyramids. The pyramids, even though the house doesn't look like a pyramid, but I'm just wondering what kind of exact measurement was used to build the pyramids. But I know I'm getting off track there because
I think it's absolutely true. No, I started studying Egypt after I built this house.
Uh-huh.
And one thing that I discovered, you know, it's always a little strange that you have a church and then maybe you'll have a different type of a bigger church or something on the very same site.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found out was in Egypt, at different times, they took down the pyramids or the temples that they had there and rebuilt them.
Oh.
And I think the reason for that is, as the numbers actually change from year to year. I mean, not from, like, 1 year to the next, but maybe every 100, 200, or 300 years, you know, the North Star is different. The heavens are, you know, what is pointing north does change also. So I think that when the temples were rebuilt, they used a slightly different number, but they put it on the same site because that particular site was lining up with, you know, one of the grids, either probably the crystalline grid and some of the other power points that exist all, you know, throughout the whole globe.
Exactly.
There's a guy named John Michel who's has some wonderful pictures of how all these things line up. And I've never quite figured out of my house what it lines up with. Because I didn't really know about that part of it when I was building, but this beautiful piece of land became available after I was trying to buy a different piece of land, and it just didn't happen. And I kept thinking, well, maybe there's something better. But so I think the universe provided me with this piece of land, but I was not conscious of what else was sort of on that trajectory.
Well, I'll never forget, I took, years ago, I used to go to a Waldorf school. So the
I love Waldorf schools.
Yes.
My
so
son went to one.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, please.
No, I said
so
my son went to a Waldorf school. So I've actually been reading a lot of Steiner about this as well. But.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
My husband and I just found the knowledge of the higher worlds and its attainment. It just came out of nowhere. And that is, you know, Steiner has written so many books. He's so prolific. However, that one is my favorite, the knowledge of the higher worlds. But anyway, when I was in school, I'll never forget, when we were studying Egypt, the teacher made this comment that I never forgot, that there was the way that the pyramids were built, that when the pharaohs were laid to rest, you know, that somehow they built the pyramids in such a way that the celestial stars or elements would come through a part in the pyramid and shine onto the third eye of the pharaoh on its way through. And that just, somehow, I think this is also related to the grid of your house, you know, and to the ancient temples of India and how everything is related, as we know.
Yeah.
So
I've never heard that before, but that is wonderful.
Yeah. That, and he just said it in passing, but I just never, you know, this is the kind of thing I remember. So, wow, that was really cool. And Steiner would certainly be Rudolf Steiner. We have some people in the chat room, I see, and I just want to say that to access Marguerite Wilson's website, it's marguerite wilson.com. Please look at that while we're talking to see her house and to see her work. And the call-in number is 347-205-9200. Anyway, so I just think that, you know, you just have an amazing, you're sitting on an amazing, I don't know, I don't like to use the word gold mine because that's not what I'm, you know, where I'm at really, but you are sitting on something that is so absolutely just so beautiful and fathomlessly deep and penetrating, and you need to be discovered. It's just so exciting. Maybe you are discovered, but Santa Fe, New Mexico is an amazing place to begin with.
Yes, it certainly is. But, you know, it was an interesting, I don't know, I was absolutely driven to do this. when I first found out about it, I would be sitting in my other house thinking, I wonder what it would feel like to be in a place where, you know, everything was in the right place. There are mm-hmm. also the elements in the house.
Mm-hmm.
So the very center square of the house is, which is the nine center squares, is called the Brahmastan, and that part is represents the space element, and it's actually the place where Brahman lives, and it
mm-hmm.
energizes all the other corners of the house.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh,
and,
my gosh, I bet it does.
And it's, so I don't have any furniture in there. It's free and clear. There's a clear story around the top, which is actually a wonderful way to keep a house in New Mexico cool during the summer, because you
mm-hmm.
really don't need air conditioning. The airflow is great.
Mm-hmm.
But it's
mm-hmm.
a great place for ceremonies. So I had numerous Ayurvedic workshops in my house. I think I've had about 13 of them so far.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like a very clear space to dispense knowledge. So that,
mm-hmm.
and I had a wedding in the house that was amazing. But
I bet.
But if you go into the north, northwest corner, that's called the air element.
Mm-hmm.
And so, besides this, you put the rooms have a function that is compatible with what the element that is most closely associated with them. So the air element is a great place for guest bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
Keep the guests moving, or a children's bedroom, because you know children are so active. It's also that corner is also associated with storage.
Mm-hmm.
And then
mm-hmm.
across from that, in the south. East is kitchen, and that's the fire element. It's a great place for the fire, for the stove. And that's considered important in Vastu. They think the kitchen in the southeast is that's where it should be. And
mm-hmm.
then the water
mm-hmm.
element is in the northeast. And so outside, I have my well, and then I have the cistern system. It's all there. The well is outside what's called the the energy fence. So it's
mm-hmm.
beyond the house, and that's a place where I have a small altar to my ancestors. It's also where my study is, and it's sort of where the organizing principle. Whatever organization in the house is necessary, that's you put the study or something
mm-hmm.
like that. And then the master bedroom is in the southwest, and that's also considered very important. In fact,
mm-hmm.
they say in a house, whoever sleeps in the southwest corner of the house rules the house.
They rule it.
They rule it. So if you have a child's bedroom in the southwest,
yes.
you're probably in trouble.
Do you remember your dreams in your house?
Well, I actually have been trying to remember them, and I'm really remembering them now. It's
mm-hmm.
like for about the last 2 weeks, I've been waking up every morning with profound dreams. But when I first moved into the house, that's the earth element. And
mm-hmm.
I felt like I was really tired, and I slept a lot. And then I found out when people go into the temples in India, sometimes that's what they do.
Yes.
Now, I never would have known that if it hadn't been happening to me. So I think it's very deeply healing, and you are really connected to the earth.
Oh, that's so interesting. How do you heat your house?
It has radiant floor heat,
uh-huh.
and it has a wood stove,
mm-hmm.
and I'm all set up to do solar when I do it as part of my next phase. It's all wired for solar,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but I haven't done that yet. It also Paula Baker Laporte, who designed the house, it was very, you know, was very conscientious about solar gain and so forth. And there are lots of windows, so it's it also has a south little porch that heats up the house too. But it's very comfortable. So.
It looks like you can walk for miles too, and get it, and the house just reminds me of being very close to the earth.
Mhm.
And the sky, yeah. And everything, all the elements.
That's interesting. You could see that, because one of the things in Vastu is to have a very flat connection with the earth.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's pretty interesting how you go about looking for a site that is suitable. I think in India a long time ago, when you probably had a lot of choice of what house sites, you know, they say to look for a place that has sweet-smelling plants and, you know, creepers. I mean, they
mm-hmm.
describe sort of this very lush ground, and not to have a site where there are bones or ants or snakes. I mean, I do live in the Southwest, so there are some of those. It's a little
yeah.
harder here. It's not like India. But my favorite thing was it said, and if you see any amorous cows on the land, that is a good place to build.
Right, right.
So the amorous cow rule is good. And saying that this, you know, that what you're doing when you're building a house like this is you really are tapping into the energy in the ground, which is immense. And so this this subtle energy, that's how you would notice, you know, what would be good and what wouldn't. But the idea is also to have it very connected to the earth. So that it's not sort of slope. There are certain slopes that are good,
yes.
and there are certain ones that aren't good. So there are lots of rules about how to select a site.
Or how do you know what slopes are good and which ones aren't?
Southeast, southwest are not good.
Uh-huh.
But I know north is a good one.
North is good, yeah.
Yeah, it's these are the kind of details that you have to sort of refer back to when you're looking at all these different things to consider, you know, for picking out.
So are you familiar with the Arc Bookstore in Santa Fe?
Yes, Jamil's a very good friend of mine.
Yeah.
In fact,
okay.
His daughter and my son were in Waldorf school together.
Oh my, well. We have a friend who had moved out of our hometown here in Lancaster, Pennsylvania to live in Santa Fe, but she had this, and she was going to live and do work at the Arc. However, she entered Santa Fe and couldn't, you know, not Santa Fe, but New Mexico, and could not stand it, so she had to come back. It was interesting. They're all kind of rooting for her. Oh my gosh, you know, she's going to Santa Fe, and what a cool thing. But I guess it's not for everybody.
It's not, and it's almost very. It tries you when you first get here.
Mm-hmm.
I found that true when I first moved here.
Did you feel an affinity right away, or did you have to grow into it?
Well, I felt like, I've always liked Santa Fe, but yes, I had to grow into it a bit. And it wasn't very welcoming right off the bat, but
mm-hmm.
I think that's what it does. It is not for everyone. So I agree with that.
It isn't for everyone, but it could be that you have to give places like that a chance, because there's
yeah.
so much going on there that is so, well, just in you, what is going on with you is such an amazing story that, and I know that there are other stories like that there, that you, where I live, it's a very conservative area. So,
okay.
But, yeah, so, but where you live, it's a whole different, just a whole different environment, where the people are completely evolved, you know, I would say. So I think I think you have to give a place like that a chance.
Well, it has, you know, very strongly, it has three cultures. So
mm-hmm.
you have a big Hispanic culture and a big Indian culture, as well
yeah.
as, you know, a white culture. And I love the mixture of the three. I think it's just so rich. The only thing I needed in Santa Fe was a Waldorf school, which it did have, because
mm-hmm.
I came from Boulder before that.
Yes.
And I didn't realize that all Waldorf schools are not the same. But
no, I guess they're not. They're different depending.
Yeah, and our school has grown so much. I mean, it has a high school, and it's lovely. And when I was there, I think I helped it grow a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm. yeah, I remember the Waldorf school I went to, and when I was growing up, I was affiliated with people who knew Rudolf Steiner. So there you have a whole different, now, of course, nowadays, you don't have that.
Yeah.
So people, but I can't say that is neither good nor bad. It's just that it was very dramatic, Germanic, and a little uptight when it came to certain, like for instance,
yes.
Adolescence made the old Germanic Steiner people very uptight. Adolescence does them in, yeah, or did them in. But I would think now that hopefully will have changed.
I think it had to. And what I was going to say was adolescence changed since Steiner originally sort of put out his ideas.
Yeah.
I think they were more mature in 7th and 8th grade than he was quite counting on. And much more needing to express themselves than be told
mm-hmm.
what to do.
Yes, yes, that's exactly right. Well, we have a whole different world with the indigo children and
yeah,
And I would think that Steiner had something to do with that evolution.
Yeah.
So
well,
it sounds like you have a healing center there where you're teaching all kinds of interesting things, and then you have your studio where you do your work. And it sounds like a really neat lifestyle.
Well, I don't always do the teaching. I mainly host some of the workshops that are here.
Mhm. Mhm.
So I also get to learn a lot about this. But yeah, it's been interesting.
Wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. And have you done a lot of traveling? What is your would you say New Mexico is the most wonderful place that you've ever been to? Or do you like other parts of the world? Do you think would India be a place where you would want to live?
Oh, I don't know if I'd want to live there. I'd love to go back. The thing that surprised me the most about India, because I hadn't really quite ever thought I'd want to go there because everyone said, well, it's really crowded.
Mm-hmm.
But just surprised me more than anything was as soon as I landed there, the colorfulness of what the saris the women wear.
Oh yeah,
was so extreme. Even the poorest of women wear beautiful saris, and I just could not believe how much color there was.
Mhm. Mhm. It's the most spiritual place in the world, I think.
Yeah. So that it was a feast. I love going into the sari shops and looking at the saris, and you know, they're just beautiful. And so when I came back, I thought, well, maybe I'll open up a sari shop in Santa Fe, and everybody will want to dress like this.
Mhm. Mhm. I guess you didn't. You didn't do that.
I dress like that every once in a while.
Yeah.
But no, I couldn't quite convince everyone else that that would be a good thing. No, I didn't even try to do it. So, but it was certainly a thought.
And do you go back to India on a regular basis?
No, I have not been back since I went the first time. I'm sort of waiting to, I think building the house was such an intense project that I really didn't, I haven't done much traveling. I do, I personally also go up to Colorado all the time.
Ah, okay. And that is where you lived for a number of years.
Well, I lived there for a number of years, but the reason I was going up there was when I lived in Boulder, we had a fruit stand up there.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, living in Santa Fe, I thought, you know, I would really like to get great Colorado peaches again. People don't know what they're missing.
Right,
and so
right.
I would take my old Explorer and put as many boxes as I could in it and just hope it made it back. But I've been going more regularly, and anyway, it's been so. I go up to all the orchards up there, and
well,
have a connection with all the peach growers, apple, cherry, etc.
How can you grow food where you live there?
Yes, I think so. It's just that what often happens is. I mean, some years are fantastic for fruit, and yes, you definitely can grow chili. I mean, there are some things that do very, very well in this climate, but
mm-hmm.
the biggest problem is just that if all the trees are budding and then there's a late snow that sort of comes in,
yeah.
That happens in Colorado as well, but it's more likely to happen in New Mexico than Colorado. They're a little bit more ready to, what they do is they build fires when the thermometers go off and say it's getting too cold for and for the buds. But, yeah.
Oh, that's
interesting.
There's a
lot of good stuff that's grown here. So
a
that
whole
was
different
one
culture.
Reason.
Yeah.
When I first started quilting, I started making all these quilts that had fruit as a theme because one of the big stores in Seattle had lots of fruit fabric. And so that was my idea of taking fruit, which I have, you know, I've handled so many boxes of it, and then putting them in my quilts. My first quilts were smaller and really designed for the kitchen. And I love to put fabric into the house, so I started making aprons and napkins and table cloths and table runners and so forth. Usually with fabric that I was never going to go in my quilts, so that was how I started doing that.
The fabric is a whole different... is a whole world, isn't it?
It really is.
It just sounds something that I bet your house and is decorated with a lot of colorful elements and fabric and your quilts must be everywhere, I would think.
Not entirely everywhere. As I said, if you look in the Santa Fe Inn magazine. You'll have a picture of what it looks like. But even that one picture on my website with a quilt behind me, I mean, I've always liked that to be able to look up and see something like that.
Well, it kind of looks like, it does look like a mandala, but it also looks like a Jackson Pollock painting, some of them. But, I mean, that's because it's, you can't really see that it's a fabric in some of these pictures.
Yeah.
It does look more like a painting.
Well, I started doing a whole series with roses a couple of years. Well, I've always made rose quilts. just neat. Because I always loved the rose and found that when you were making something that was monochromatic, different times of day, the light hits it differently. So, and it looks very different in different people's houses or rooms. So that was something that I always liked doing. The ones I have done lately have been these ones with water, with blue squares.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a much smaller square to them. So I was working on these two pieces that were for, I call them Noah's Flood. And so the squares made it look like there was an enormous deluge of water.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I was at a Robert Bly workshop probably 20 years ago, and in his book, The Small Book of the Human Shadow, he talks about the three birds from the Babylonian story of Noah's Ark, and said that Noah let out three birds. The first was the dove. It went out and came back. The second was the swallow, and it went out and came back. And then the third was the raven, and it went out, but it never came back to the ark. It used to fly between the ark, and he could see that there was mud on its feet. And so
well,
it was
the most intelligent bird and creature on the universe.
Yeah, so the bird flew back and forth, and then... I think Noah let out the dove again, and it came back with the olive branch. So he knew that the floodwaters had receded. But the reason it was important to Robert Bly in his book on the human shadow was that he said that to get more light in his being, he'd have to go to his raven self, because that's where the light was.
Well, that makes sense.
It wasn't with the dove, you know, which to me is very transcendent and white and pure. It's really back to the mud, you know, the stories, the earth. And I had a really interesting thing happen while I was making this particular quilt, and there were actually two of them. I was working on two at a time. One was much, much bigger than the other one. But... in a dance class I was doing, I realized that all the light was really right under my foot. It's like trying always being told to, you know, pay attention or stand up straight or something. It was like all that joy was just down there. And once I could feel it coming right through me, and it was really from working so intently on this raven and this dove. And it was a great experience. So I know where it is. It's part of that shadow.
Oh, yes. I can
see
that.
Lots of energy there.
Now, Marguerite, we're reaching the end of the hour. What I would like people to know is where we can buy your quilts.
And thank you.
Yes.
Yes. Well, the best way is to go onto my website and contact me.
Yes.
And I have pictures of all the quilts. I have some. I have a lot of them on the website, but I have other ones that aren't on there.
Yes.
I'm just sort of switching over to a different way of presenting all the work that I have.
You need to blog about this stuff.
I'm going to.
Good. That's good news, that sounds wonderful.
So I would say www.marguerite.wilson.com, and it has my email on there. You can just press the contact me button.
Yes. Yes, it does. And also, it seems like just your whole email comes up. So that's a good way for people to contact you. Excellent.
I also, let's say I'm on Facebook too.
Oh, good. I want to contact you there.
Well, okay. So it's Marguerite Wilson.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I'm
Facebook.
Surprised we aren't friends yet, but maybe I thought maybe we were, but
I'm not sure.
Okay.
So anyway, let us, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, good.
I haven't had the clock on, so I have no idea what time it is.
It's coming to the end of the hour, and I just I need to play some music, which my whole computer screen went blank.
Oh.
I love it. It's just beautiful. And I usually play the music of Klaus B. Jensen, but I'm glad we got to discuss where we can buy your quilts, because that's extremely important, because you need to get the word out. And I would love to have you back, and we can discuss. I mean, I could talk to you forever. You're just so wonderful. I'm so happy to meet you. And
yes, well, I think you should come to Santa Fe sometime. So.
Oh, I think so. I really am excited about that.
And bring your dog.
Oh, well, she is a given. She's definitely a given, yes.
Yeah. Well, she'll like Fido Lane, so.
And she'll love everything about that area, so. And I know that my husband and I will we'll wonder why we live where we live. I mean, because it's, like I said, the most conservative place on the earth. But Marguerite, please keep in touch, and I will find you on Facebook. And
okay,
I just formulated a closed dream group that you might want to join, and we can discuss dreams that we have on there.
Oh, great!
The reason I have it closed is because I don't want the world to know what I'm dreaming.
Okay,
so I will invite you.
That sounds great.
It does. You have a wonderful, wonderful evening, and I will talk with you again.
Well, thank you. This was really fun, and I enjoyed it so much. So thank you.
I loved it. Thank you so much. And here's the music of Klaus B. Jensen.